Happy Wednesday, boys and girls. Welcome back to Leading Off, the daily podcast that lets you quickly catch up on what you might have missed the previous day. As always, I am your host, Dan Harris. You can find me on Twitter at DanHarris80. With me, virtually holding my hand through it all, is my producer, Brendan Tuma. You can find him on Twitter at TooMuchTuma. Now, we had a full slate of games yesterday and have tons to discuss, including my three biggest takeaways, which include Trey Turner's injury. What it might mean for the future? Blake Snell telling you to take your concerns about him and stuff them in a sack. And more troubling velocity readings from Chris Sale. But Turner is obviously the headliner here. He sustained a non-displaced broken right index finger after being hit by a pitch from Zach Eflin in the first inning of yesterday's Nats-Phillies game and will be placed on the injured list. Turner was off to a blazing start with a 1257 OPS, two home runs, and four steals in just three games. Davey Martinez did not give a timetable, but you are almost certainly looking at a minimum of 4 weeks, and you should probably bank on closer to six. Javi Baez missed 7 weeks with a non-displaced fracture back in 2015 in the minors, but that was to his non-throwing hand. There's really not much you can do but wait and see. Wilmer Defoe is likely to see the bulk of time at shortstop for the Nationals, but you do not want him or his 669 career OPS. Now, the Nationals could call up Carter Kieboom, who is only 21 years old, but it seems unlikely, as he hasn't played above AA. Potentially shortstop-eligible players who may be available for you include Ketel Marte, who homered last night, and the always underrated Jorge Polanco. Give both of them a look. Now, I know you guys are all bummed now, so let's talk about something happier from that Nationals-Phillies game, like Bryce Harper hitting a mammoth home run, 458 feet to be exact, followed by a grade-A bat flip in his return to Washington last night. Harper may have signed late this spring, but he looks locked and loaded and ready to have a fantastic season. He also has perfect hair, which I mention only because my producer bet me that I could not squeeze that into the podcast. Note, do not ever bet me that I can't squeeze something into a podcast because you will be wrong. Now, in addition to breaking poor Trey Turner's finger, Zach Eflin actually had a fine little start for the Phillies, pitching five shutout innings, allowing just four base runners, and striking out nine. He quietly had a really good spring with a 3.54 ERA and a 1.08 WHIP, with nearly a strikeout per inning. His fastball gained velocity last year, and he improved his control. Now, his velocity was actually down a tick last night from last year, but it was still above what he used to be. This is certainly someone to monitor, but as you'll hear me say offer, let's temper expectations. It was a relatively chilly night in Washington, and after Turner left the game in the first inning, the Nationals lineup was decimated. Still, he is certainly worth a pickup in nearly every league, and you can start him at home his next time out against the Twins. Now, Eflin was great, but he was absolutely nothing compared to Blake Snell. Snell had the rough debut on opening day against the Astros, allowing five runs and striking out just three in six innings, but he bounced back in a huge way yesterday against the Rockies, throwing seven innings of two-hit ball with 13 strikeouts, including six in a row at one point. He set or matched three career highs yesterday. Matched his career high with 13 strikeouts, matched his career high by getting seven strikeouts on his curveball, and set his career high with 25 swings and misses. Even with last week's blip, he's 10-1 with a 1.53 ERA in his last 12 starts. Now, I'm usually conservative, but I'm going to go ahead and say you should probably start him against the White Sox in his next start. Francisco Lindor met with an ankle specialist in Green Bay yesterday and was officially diagnosed with a mild high ankle sprain and is expected to be out another 3 weeks. Now, that's good news, but this is a preliminary timetable. Lindor will meet with Terry Francona and the Indians president of baseball operations, Chris Antonetti, today, and they should give a firmer timetable. 3 weeks feels like a lot, but this is good news if you're a Lindor owner. Trust me, this is a marathon, not a sprint, guys. Daniel Murphy has also been given an updated timetable with his finger injury, and it is at least a month. Garrett Hampson got the start at second base on Tuesday and batted second, going 0-for-4. As we talked about, no one was hitting Snell today, but the Rockies are absolutely desperate for offense. They scored just 16 runs in six games and just one in their last 30 innings, albeit all of these have come on the road. Now, most likely you're going to see two out of Hampson, Ryan McMahon, and Mark Reynolds get regular playing time in Murphy's absence, so it would behoove Hampson to start hitting and immediately. Now, I called the Guinness Book of World Records earlier today, and the most consecutive podcast episodes talking about the Orioles closing situation is four, so let's see if we can break that. The Orioles somehow won again, and Miguel Castro, not Michael Givens, earned the save in the 2-1 victory. As I have said repeatedly, the Orioles are one of the best teams in baseball. They're going to win 100 games, and you should pick up all of their relievers. Now, stop. Three different relievers have saves for this team. They are not a good team. Stop making me talk about the Orioles. Now, speaking of closer situations that you don't want any part of, Ian Kennedy got another save chance for the Royals on Tuesday, but unlike his first one, he couldn't convert it. Seriously, if you did not pay for saves this year, this is what you are left with. Ian Kennedy and Baltimore. Barf. But it is worth mentioning that Blake Parker got and converted the save chance for the Twins in their win over the Royals, walking one and striking out one in a scoreless ninth inning. There is not much clarity with the Twins, but if you are desperate for saves, Parker, in my opinion, is your best bet. Taylor Rogers really needs to be safe for lefties, and Trevor May is the Twins' best reliever. Rocco Baldelli likely wants to deploy May in the highest leverage situations, leaving Parker for the ninth. This is obviously a fluid situation, but I do think that Parker can be more than just part of a committee. Now, even if you did pay for saves with Aroldis Chapman, you may be in some trouble, as he took the loss on Tuesday against the Tigers, pitching the ninth of a tie game and allowing two runs on three hits and a walk. The game-winning hit was by Dustin Peterson, and it was his first major league hit, so kudos to him. Chapman allowed two RBI hits. Both came on four-seam fastballs. The first was 97.8 miles per hour. The second was 94.8 miles per hour. So I have this awful line from Ghostbusters 2 that I like to say in these situations. This is true. It's when Janosch, Sigourney Weaver's boss, is at the art museum, and he's walking around, and he's looking at everybody's paintings, and he sees someone, and he says, "Everything you're doing is bad. I want you to know this." That is basically how I feel about Aroldis Chapman right now. We are really in danger Will Robinson territory. He had a very sluggish spring. There were all these rumors of a shoulder issue. In his first game, he averaged 95 miles per hour. His second game, just 97. In April of last year, Chapman was averaging nearly 99 miles per hour. Now, you have to think at some point an IL stint is coming. But again, don't overreact yet. It is early. It is cold. There are lots of factors. But if Zach Britton or Adam Ottavino are on your waiver wire, they're not bad stashes if you have room. Speaking of troubling velocity concerns, let's talk about Chris Sale. Sale allowed just one run and just five base runners over six innings last night against the A's. And that is the end of the good news on Chris Sale segment. He struck out just one batter. Worst of all, he averaged just 89.3 miles per hour with his fastball, which was his lowest average fastball velocity of any start in his career. I honestly do not know what to make of this, but for whatever reason, if I am forced to choose, I am going to buy Alex Cora's comments that this is intentional. Sale has been breaking down at the end of each of the last two seasons. The Red Sox are coming off a World Series. They just signed him to an extension, and I have legitimately never seen a pitcher lose this much velocity intentionally, but he really looks like he's just kind of taking it easy out there. Now, if you can get a comparable ace, then I certainly would, but otherwise, I'm just not going to sell low. He'll pitch in Arizona against the Diamondbacks his next time out, and I would start him there. Madison Bumgarner homered yesterday, but he was completely outdone both at the plate and on the mound by Zach Greinke, who hit two home runs. Now, Bumgarner allowed five runs to the Dodgers, but none of them were earned. His overall line of seven base runners and four strikeouts in six innings is more than passable. Now, we're still in wait-and-see mode here with Bumgarner, but you should start him every time at home, including in his next start against the Padres. As for Greinke, his game got off to a rough start after allowing a two-run homer to Hunter Renfroe, but he really pulled it together after that. In addition to his two home runs himself, he allowed just three runs over six innings with 10 strikeouts against the Padres. Start him with confidence at home against the Rangers in his next start. And just so I don't upset my cousin Kate Upton, I will note that Justin Verlander had an off night, allowing four runs and nine base runners over four innings against the Rangers. Verlander is fine, and you should obviously start him against the Yankees in his next time out. And no, Kate Upton is not actually my cousin. Just another bet with my producer. I am cleaning up today. Adalberto Mondesi had an inside-the-park home run against the Twins. He now has at least one RBI in each game this season, and he also stole his first base of the year. My fantasy take? He is fast, and he is good at baseball. Unfortunately, his inside-the-park home run injured Byron Buxton, who was removed from the game after crashing into the wall trying to catch Mondesi's drive. He was being evaluated for back pain and was diagnosed with a rib contusion. He'll likely get today off, but he should be okay in the long run. Now, Buxton wasn't the only player to suffer an injury on Tuesday. Luke Voit was hit on the hand by a Joe Jimenez pitch, but x-rays were negative. According to Voit, he's just, quote, pissed off after being hit twice, so you can probably bank on a long ball or two from Voit today. Brandon Nimmo also left last night's game against the Marlins after being hit by a pitch on his left hand. Preliminary x-rays were negative, but the Mets are going to do more tests. Now, Nimmo seemed in good spirits after the game, so this is probably nothing, but if he does miss time, Ahmed Rosario will likely fill in at leadoff, boosting his value. Edwin Encarnacion was scratched with a sore left hand. Now, this is not believed to be serious, more that the Mariners wanted to give him an extra day off. He should be back in the lineup Thursday against the White Sox. Yandy Diaz batted the leadoff with Austin Meadows out, and he went 1-for-4 with a run scored. But he was removed late in the game after aggravating a minor left ankle injury while hitting a double. Kevin Cash said that Diaz will almost certainly be out of the lineup today, but hopefully he can return on Friday against the Giants. Finally, let's look a little deeper in talking about one of the more underrated starters this year, and that's Jordan Zimmermann. He held the Yankees in check yesterday, allowing just one run over 6 2/3 innings while striking out 6 in a no decision. Zimmermann dominated the Blue Jays in his first start. He is kinda becoming intriguing here. He's using his slider and curveball a lot more, and when I say more, I mean a lot more. Last year, his slider was 33% of the time, and he used his curveball 16% of the time. Both were career highs to that point. But this year, it's 39% sliders and 21% curveballs. And this is what I don't get sometimes with major league pitchers. Those are clearly his most effective pitches. He had just a 208 batting average against the slider last year, and a 263 batting average against his curveball last year. He's finally starting to throw them more, and he could be an actual starting option for fantasy overs. He'll take on the Indians at home in his next start. Some final notes from yesterday. We saw 3 more extensions, and like most of the others, they're not particularly fantasy relevant, but let's touch on them quickly. Germán Márquez signed a 5-year, $43 million extension with the Rockies. Now, Márquez was under control for several more seasons, so this move has very little impact even for keeper or dynasty purposes. But it shows that the Rockies trust Márquez, and frankly, you should too. In his last 14 starts, he has 94 innings, 125 strikeouts, and a 2.2 ERA. He's a stud in the making, without question. Randall Grichuk signed a 5-year, $52 million extension with the Blue Jays. This buys out 3 of his free agent years. This is great news for Grichuk's long-term value. He should get guaranteed playing time, unlike in St. Louis, and he has legitimate 40-homer power if he can stay healthy. Ronald Acuna signed an 8-year, $100 million deal with the Braves, including 2 team options. This legitimately has 0 fantasy impact. Acuna remains one of the top options in dynasty leagues, and this deal does not change that in the slightest. Hashtag analysis. Kevin Pillar was traded to the Giants. He immediately becomes one of the Giants' best players, and he should see mostly everyday playing time. It is a sad state of affairs in San Francisco. That's really all he can say about that. Jonathan Loaisiga will start today against the Tigers. He had a rough spring and a tough 2018 with a 5.11 ERA in 24 innings. But the Tigers represent what is a trend now. There are several extremely streamable matchups, including the Royals, the Giants, and the Orioles. If you're feeling saucy, go ahead and stream Loaisiga. Finally, we saw Greg Bird taking grounders at third base, as DJ LeMahieu probably does not have the chops to hold down the third base position. Now, Bird hasn't played a game at third since high school, but fantasy owners would be happy to see him get in the lineup any way he can. And that is it for today's version of Leading Off. Make sure to subscribe to the Fantasy Pros Baseball Podcast and check your feed every weekday morning. Again, you can always find me on Twitter at @DanHarris80 or Brendan at @TooMuchTuma if you want to talk about anything at all. Enjoy your baseball, everyone. We'll catch up again tomorrow.